Welcome to the first preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2014 season. I'm Marcus and I'm joined by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. It's only 3 weeks till the footy starts, and then we get footy every day for a couple of weeks during the NAB Cup.
Over the off-season, there's been a lot of player movements, some of which we're going to talk about today. But before we get into the show today, which won't be too heavy, we do want to just briefly talk about how we went for 2013, for those of you who didn't keep up with us until the end of the year.
I finished on 208th, which should be a really good ranking, I guess, and I should be pretty happy with that. I guess when you get sort of close-ish to the top, you just feel even further away from the prize a little bit. We finished second overall in the league ranking contest, lost by only a couple hundred points in the end after really battling for that number one spot. And I won the second league overall in the grand final. So I think I've done that like three out of the last 4 years or something. So crushing the leagues, pretty happy with that. Won a decent amount of money. And how'd you go, mate?
I did finish with a higher overall ranking than you for the year, Mark. I was trending toward that for the year, and 113th was my final rank, so just out of the 100. But nonetheless, still happy with that entering into 2014, because I think that keeps up my streak of 4 years in the top 500, I think.
Didn't you run out of trades with like 5 or 6 weeks to go? And I was not too far behind. I thought I was definitely going to come after you, and then fair bit of luck involved, I'd say, for you holding 100 spots ahead of me in the end.
I think round 19, I was 122nd and ran out of trades after round 21. I went 137, 114, 113 in the finish. So yes, I was very lucky to hold on to that position, but I'll take it nonetheless, Mark. In the history books, people only remember the victors, isn't that right?
That's true. And I know that you did go a little bit more aggressive last year. How do you feel about that?
This year, Mark, I'm going to go back to my more... I do like the Smokies in the mid-price selections, but I am a little bit more conservative traditionally. I've finished with trades that have netted me wasted points because I used them too late in the season previously. I don't want to do that again, but I felt last year was probably a bit too aggressive. There are points late in the season where I really could have used the trade and I used it earlier, just burning through them. So a modified approach, but nonetheless still aggressive, because I think we saw last year you do need to be aggressive to win nowadays.
You do with the big field sizes and everyone having similar teams. You just got to sort of hope everything goes your way, really.
All right. So we don't want to make it too heavy a show. I'm just trying to catch those of you who are looking for a bit of a listen before the NAB Cup starts. So we'll talk a little bit about the player movements because we haven't had a show since the end of the season. So there's a lot of exciting players to talk about in new club jumpers. And Mark, you've stolen one of my Geelong boys, which we'll get to a little bit later.
So the first player we're going to look at was an interesting one. The Bombers went pretty hard at Nicky Dell at one point, apparently, but he ended up choosing to go to North Melbourne. And I guess with Swallow being out for most of the year, Del Santo will sort of fill in his place and make it not so big a loss for the Kangaroos.
Yeah, well, Nicky Dow is priced at 525k after only averaging 97.5 last year. So we know that he's capable of averaging 115, and that's probably why a lot of people will be looking toward him. And the good thing is, you know, Daniel Wells, what do you reckon, Mark? Who will take the tag, Wellsy or Del Santo?
I think given Del Santo's age, you'd probably have to tag Wells because just of how damaging he can be. We saw a couple of times last year where if he does get off the leash, he can just win a game off his own boot. He can kick goals and really cut teams up. So you'd think that Wells would be in his prime and that the tag would be going to him.
Yeah, and we did see Stevens start getting the tag over Del Santo as Dow sort of dropped off last year and Stevens emerged. So yeah, I think you'll agree with you there, Mark. If he gets out to be the outside link man in a team that is potentially, people are touting top four for North Melbourne, Mark.
A lot of people are.
Yeah, you would think that if they end up top four and Nicky Dow's no longer getting the tag and just picking up the cheap ones on the outside, he is capable of potentially pushing his average up 18 points.
The player that we all really want to talk about is Chappie. Triple premiership player, moves to the Bombers, has huge averages in the past, starting at 464. So apparently he's lost a bit of weight. I've heard reports he's lost about 5 kilos, and there was talk that Bomber would play him up forward, and I think that he will definitely spend some time there, but we'll definitely get some rotations through the Essendon midfield, and Bomber's also potential top four, and if they do that, then Chappie could have a big year if he can stay fit.
He's probably the riskiest selection he's been in a while, obviously, because of his age, even though his price has dropped. So I think the only real consideration is how much value you think you'll get out of Chappie before you'll have to probably move him on. I'd suggest that at some point you'd think that Chapman may have to be traded due to injury or being rested.
You think he would get a rest at his age?
Yeah. So, but that's okay this year because, you know, we have buys stacked up a slightly different way. So I think he's a decent selection, but I've been a Chappie lover in the past and I'm a little bit more hesitant to get on the Chap Attack train again, not because he's left Geelong, but because of his age, and I do really doubt his durability.
Now, how do you feel about the movement? Geelong basically not really offering him a decent contract to stay.
Well, I went to the Best and Fairest Night. Yeah, I remember that Chapman's sentiments were he was disappointed, but he understood that the club needed to bring in and give it the youngsters an opportunity so that they could grow the same way he was allowed to grow. So, you know, maybe if they didn't move older guys on, Chapman may not have got as much opportunity when he first joined the club too. So I'm hoping most of the older players, if they get pushed out, see it that way. It's hard to have such sustained success without there being an exodus at some point of your older players. I wish him all the best at Essendon, but I'm happy with how things went. I think Geelong and all the players who left handled it with the utmost class.
Another big mover was Daisy Thomas. It was touted all year that he would be going, and even from the start of the year, and he probably would have earned a lot more if he hadn't have spent most of the year out injured with the ankle and then had an unsuccessful return. He definitely burnt both of us last year. Yep. Would you take him, given that they're looking at him being ready for round one? There's no guarantees with that. Is he a viable person in the midfield?
I think that if he is playing round one, he's almost an auto pickup for me at 342,000.
Very cheap.
Yeah, and that's just because of how cheap he is, really, more than anything. He's burnt me really badly in the past, but I just don't see anywhere but up from that price point. So I'd say if he's lining up, absolutely, I'll give him a run in my team. He's back playing under Mick Malthouse, and he plays the type of game we love. I remember I used to say when he was on top of his game that, you know, his game style reminds me of Gary Ablett, the way he gets the ball around the ground, the way he uses it. Not as consistent, obviously, but yeah, I absolutely rate him. How about you, Mark?
Ooh, yeah, it's a tough one. I think that at like 450,000, you'd probably have to really toss it up given his fitness and lack of full preseason. But at 341, yeah, if he's named round one, that'd be pretty hard not to take him. Even if he can get to sort of 100 average from there, which you'd expect from Daisy, then you'd be doing quite well out of it.
In the back line, Mark, one of my players from last year that served me quite well, Heath Shaw, he's gone to GWS. The Rat Pack has been broken up. How do you feel about Heath Shaw at GWS? Now, we know that under pressure, his points can suffer a little bit. There'll be less quality players taking attention off Shaw. How do you think he'll do over in the charcoal and the orange?
It's going to be a really interesting one. And there is a lot of defensive options this year at over 500,000. So he's competing with people like Hibbert and Hodge at the same price. I guess he was really exposed towards the end of last year where he was taken deep by a lot of teams, which really affected his scoring and his output and sort of seemed to lead to a lot of frustration, which might have contributed to him leaving. So from that perspective, he's shown a bit of vulnerability, and he's always been a little bit up and down in the past because when he dominates, he'll get tagged or taken out of games for a while after that. So yeah, he's a real tricky one, probably unlikely to be a starting player in my team, but if GWS win a couple of games, you can see him really being leader in their back line.
Now, another former Geelong player, but he did move to Sydney and now he's at GWS together with Heath Shaw. That's Shane Mumford. How do you feel about him, Mark? We have in the past pumped him up as well. He has been one of our failing starting picks that have helped to bomb one of our seasons a couple years back.
But he also dominated for us when we traded him in 1 year. So he definitely has a huge ceiling, underpriced at under 500,000. He didn't get as many points last year because Mike Pike just did so well that some of the number one ruckman points were taken off him. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance out the ruck duties at GWS and whether they're playing like Giles and Mumford together or how they're planning to do that, or are one of the centre half forwards like Patton or Boyd or going to jump into the ruck for a little bit. So like, I think there's probably just better options. Does have a huge ceiling, but I think you'd want him to be in a team that's going to win a few more games. Now, another big GWS recruit, Buddy Franklin. Oh, wait, that didn't happen, did it? He went to Sydney.
Yeah.
That was a massive shock in the post season. Everybody expected him to go to GWS. Everyone thought that he'd leave, and then Sydney came from nowhere with a 10-year contract, just something that we haven't seen for a long time since Alistair Lynch has kept getting brought up at the time. Huge move by Sydney, especially with Tippett already in their forward line, and they're premiership contenders, as we know. They've got a great midfield with lots of young players coming through there. Franklin should get pretty decent delivery, has a great record at the SCG. He's underpriced after Hawthorn sort of manipulated his role a bit last year to prepare for life beyond Buddy. What do you think of Buddy as a potential super coach this year?
I think you just got to lock him in, I think. It's similar to Ablett leaving. You know, when the absolute champ players leave, they're going to do really well. They're going to prove themselves over there. And I think Franklin's capable of doing that. They talk about how intense he is already. I don't think he's joking around. I think he knows that there's a lot of pressure on him after the move. And, you know, as long as he puts his mind to it, 110%, he should absolutely dominate up there. So considering he's underpriced, I'm happy to welcome him into my team. Obviously, a lot can change depending on how structures look, but I have faith that the Buddy train will come home this year. He is capable of averaging 110 in the forward line.
I think at the start of last year, he was about 600,000, and a lot of people chose not to start with him, which seemed like the risky move at the time, but it also seemed like thought out because he's so expensive and doesn't have a whole lot of upside from 600,000. But then once you see him at the new price under 500, I guess that does change things quite a bit. Yeah, I guess it does make him very tempting and very difficult to leave out because you wouldn't really see him averaging less than the price of 487.
That's probably the best argument for it. Can you really see Buddy dropping off from his current average?
So was it good move from Sydney to offer him such a long contract and really seemingly go for that premiership window and having to lose players like Mumford along the way as a result?
Yeah, it really remains to be seen. I don't think it's the best football decision. I think it's a really great marketing decision, but I just would have thought that it's going to start to hurt them down the track. But, you know, maybe Buddy will last 10 years and I'll look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. What do you reckon, Mark?
Like I said, it's really tough to predict. If they take one or two premierships in the next 3 years, then it will have been completely worth it because premierships are really hard to win. They've got a great group at the moment, and they can get an extra premiership within their window, then it'll be worth the pain in the future, I think. The next player is Colin Sylvia, who he's done really well in fantasy before in certain patches, but then he'll have a brain fade and get suspended or get himself injured and just misses large chunks of footy. He's priced really cheaply, available in the forward line. Maybe Ross Lyon can get something into him that gets him going this year and keeps him sane and on the park. Interesting to compare him to Chapman as well. Do you think that you'd take Sylvia or Chapman in the forward line?
I think I prefer Chapman because I at least know he's going to get the points. It's just about whether he can stay on the park. Whereas with Sylvia, even if he stays on the park, I'm still not 100% sure that he can get back up to 100 scoring. You wouldn't really want to be caught out with a player averaging 95 for the whole year if you had a choice, and that's a possibility with Sylvia, I think, and on top of his injury history. So I'm not the biggest fan, but having said that, he's shown the capability to do it, so I definitely think he's a very attractive option.
The next player we're going to talk about is Ben McAvoy going to the Hawks, and it's really interesting that we're talking about a lot of top teams here. We've talked about Del Santo going to North and Chapman to the Bombers and Thomas to the Blues and Buddy to Sydney, Sylvia to Fremantle and McAvoy to the Hawks. It's interesting to see these really top teams that are very close to their premiership windows topping up with absolute superstars. Now, Ben McAvoy, I know that he's been in your team before and you had big raps on him, I think, at the start of last year. Can he be a top scorer with the Hawks?
Interesting. David Hale, who I never really saw as a particularly high-scoring player, did well in the Hawks' ruck role. So you would think that Ben McAvoy, who's I would rate as a better ruckman, should be able to notch up a few more points as the number one ruck for their team. So I think it's quite possible that he can average 105 plus, maybe even 110 pushing it.
I think he'd be wanting to look at getting 110 out of your ruckman this year, 110 plus if you could.
Yeah.
Like if he's only going to get 105, then you may as well par.
Yeah, it's interesting to sort of say that because I think I was in a similar mindset last year, but my perspective on that has changed a little bit because it sort of feels by the time we get to the end of the season, it's a little bit of just like a raffle as to which players actually ended up with the high scores. And those are just the rucks that didn't end up getting injured or ended up playing in teams where the supporting ruck got injured and they ended up being the sole ruckman. So I used to think probably a little bit more in that way, and he doesn't have quite the max scoring potential as maybe some of the other ruckmen do, but but because it's a little bit more, it feels a little bit more random to me by the time we get to the end of the seasons.
If Hale got injured and they were going like a McAvoy Roughhead sort of combo in the rucks, that might not work out anyway with the Hawk selection, because they do have a few other younger ruckmen coming through. But yep. If McAvoy got that extra ruck time, then you could see him averaging 115 easily.
So, yeah, I'm more looking toward consistency in the ruck than ever before, Mark. Consistency or value? The people who have started it with value in their ruck over the past 2 years have turned out the best. They've been risky selections, but they've actually delivered. Even if it's marginal improvement, it's still better because a lot of the premium ruckmen, you're putting a lot of eggs into a really injury-prone basket. And when they go down, they drop in value and it stings a lot more. So different approach to rucks this year.
It'll be interesting to talk that through as the preseason goes on, because rucks will be interesting decisions with Sandilands and McIntosh and Nick Nat all fairly cheap, and Cruiser maybe coming into his own, and Leuenberger improving. So there's definitely a lot of choices that we're going to have in the ruck. Now, the last player we want to talk about of player movements is from Melbourne, and that's Bernie Vince. What is he, 424,000? You'd expect Melbourne to improve a little bit at least this year, and Vince to play a more significant role in the midfield than he was at Adelaide.
He's priced to average, I think, Mark, 78.7. What do you think Bernie Vince needs to average for him to be worth it to come into your team?
Yeah, it's a good question, because you would think that he would average above that at Melbourne. But then you'd want him to maybe average, if you could average 100 across the start of the season, then it'd probably be worth it because you could upgrade him. But yeah, if you're sort of averaging in that 90, 95 bracket, you're getting the improvement, you're getting the value, but he's going to require an upgrade at some stage, so it's not great.
Question is probably, can Bernie Vince average 100 playing for Melbourne? Because when you're playing for Melbourne, there are not many players who actually end up with an average of 100. I think at the start of last year, for the first 8 weeks, we didn't see a single player who could maintain an average of 100. But they could improve again this year, Melbourne.
You would think so. Across the board, it's going to be a very interesting season. See improvement in most teams, maybe except St Kilda.
I think Vince is a decent selection if you just need to watch his preseason, because he is a former Best and Fairest winner. Now, getting to some general thoughts as we looked over the team selection, Mark. One big thing which we still haven't talked about this show is, gee, how expensive are the rookies?
Especially those early draft picks. The biggest lock of the rookies would have to be Jack Martin from the Gold Coast. Martin's $222,000 for a rookie. So that's a lot of money to be putting in a first-year player, even if he's supposed to be the most amazing player of all time. And it's not just that as well. Like, you've got McDonald and Claude Janashi. I'm going to have to learn how to say that, aren't I? James Aish at 187. You've got, like, all these top 10 draft picks are really expensive.
So what's that going to do to the overall competition, Mark?
I think it's going to make people presume the mid prices are more valuable. It's going to make these people coming off the rookie list even more valuable if you can get those cheap rookies, because they have the greater distance of improvement potential. So yeah, it's definitely going to change strategies for this year. And as we get through the NAB Cup, I'm sure we're going to spend a fair bit of time talking about this. So as an example, like, you've got Josh Kelly at $212,000, the second pick. So playing for GWS, he should play plenty of games, very highly rated in the past, would have been in a lot of teams. But then you've got Daisy Thomas at only $130,000 more. So it really does seem to make those mid prices a little bit more attractive.
Dom Tyson, last year played 3 games. This year, he's only 4K more than Josh Kelly.
Number 2 draft pick. And I think that's good for Supercoach. I think that's great. It makes your ability to spot talent rather than just look at the top 10 draft picks to come to the fore a bit more. So I think what we like about the game is an ability to pick someone that maybe everyone else hasn't, or to use our own ability to spot talent rather than just sort of going who everyone else is going with, which is what it's become a bit in the last few years. So anything that values that is good for the game, I think.
Absolutely, Mark. And now the other thing that we noticed that was pretty big change is last few years, Mark, backline being the bane of our existence. But this year, start rubbing your hands together, guys. We've got Jimmy Bartel, Jaron McVeigh, Andrew Walker, Sam Mitchell, Luke Hodge, all available in the backline this year.
Yeah, it's going to make picking those backline players a fair bit different, isn't it? And we've had in the past the locks of Goddard and Deledio, who just sort of end up in every team. And again, I think this makes it more interesting, having four players in Bartel, McVay, Walker and Mitchell all over 560 that could all do really well. Three of them are bona fide midfielders in their teams with great scoring histories and potential. So the fact that we're not just going to be able to lock in the same players and everyone's going to have to sort of go with who they think, and it's going to be really, really interesting going into the year. And how many can you afford in your back line? And are you going to take any? Are you going to take one, two or three of those guys? So it's definitely going to make things interesting and make teams a little bit more different at the start.
Early days, Mark. Who's your 1-2 from those five?
Jimmy was so good to me last year. Jeez, I loved Jimmy last year. It'll be interesting. McVay really interests me because he had some huge scoring games last year, but he really did spend a lot of time playing off half back, and he does seem like someone that might cop a tag in a few more games. But then Sydney have got so many players that you could potentially tag, so that makes it a little bit more difficult. I think probably Bartel and Mitchell at the moment, but that's going to develop over the next couple of months before the season starts. Mm. What about you?
I find it hard to say Bartel just because I've watched him a lot, and he did average a 106, and that I feel at his age that may be about his ceiling. But like you said, a midfielder who's playing in the back line, and this year he might move out of that position. So Bartel's probably my front runner, even though I really feels like that's so close to his ceiling.
Well, I think that's the thing with McVay, Bartel and Mitchell, is that they're all probably at their ceiling. So you're not really picking them for value. You're picking them because they're a midfielder playing in the back line that can get you a lot more point compared to other backline players.
I'm a little bit greedy though, Mark. I'll still try and pick the one out of the four of them that I think can go up five more points.
If you can get Bartel to average 105, then that's a lot more points than a Hibbard who averaged 95 last year.
Yeah, but like at the start of the season, this is blue ocean thinking here, Mark. I'm thinking, out of these four guys, I'm going to pick the one that averages 110 and I'm going to be the genius that wins this.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sam Mitchell seems like the most consistent of the four, I've got to say. And in the back line, that's got to hold some sway. So he'd be really close for me too. Now, onto some general AFL talk just before we wrap up, Mark. How do you reckon your Bombers will go for this year?
To be honest, I'm just so excited that it's not 2013 anymore. And I remember sitting at work in February last year and seeing on Facebook, news about to break. It's got something to do with the Bombers, and just the dread that went through me. And it was an extremely difficult year. So the Bombers can focus on their footy, and it's great to have Bomber as a coach. I mean, I'm as big a James Hurt fan as you'll ever see, but I'm also a huge Bomber fan as well. And I was rapt when he came back to the club, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch how that plays out, because that's going to be a huge drama. Like, if Bombers do finish top four, then what happens to Bomber at the end of the season? Because he's sort of spoken that he's really enjoying the fact that he is coaching, and that he was held back in how much you could actually influence the club as just an assistant coach, and couldn't sort of get his way on everything. So whether he would ever step back into an assistant coaching role is going to be really interesting. He's already said that Hurley's going back and Carlisle's going forward, and I think that's going to be fantastic, because Hurley has really struggled to take marks and kick goals and do what a centre half forward needs to do. And although Carlisle was amazing last year, I think Hurley will be all Australian centre half back. He's a fantastic centre half back player. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Joey Danaher. Can he stay on the field and start making an impact on the competition? So this time last year, I was very excited. This time this year, I'm also very excited about what the Bombers can do.
The most exciting thing for me, Mark, is to see the slight change in game plan that Bomber will bring. I think it'll be interesting to see no Gumby and no Cremery, what your forward line looks like. It'll be interesting to see if your training shapes up so that your boys don't break down again, because, you know, there are a lot of teams in contention to win it, and I think you guys are the one of the most serious ones, but it's about, you know, getting all those things right and whether you'll finally get it all right this year. So it'll be a very interesting season to follow your Bombers, Mark.
How about your Cats?
Yeah, interesting year for us too. I think the main thing will be how well do our young players come together and step up as a new core, because we haven't really seen our old core completely disintegrate yet, but we are losing more and more senior players. And eventually you'll get to the point where just the strength of the senior players together with the strength of our structures won't be enough to produce result week after week. You'll actually need these younger boys to start taking the game on and winning. And, you know, that's a whole different story. We've seen North Melbourne just not be able to do that year after year. So, you know, you just don't know whether that's going to happen for your young players. If it does happen, I think we have as good a shot as any other team, because I really, really like our kids. And you know, we've got McIntosh coming back. We've got Menzel coming back. There's quite a bit to be excited for. You know, there's also, excitingly, old players have left, so there's more spots for new kids to take the mantle. We haven't seen Schroeder play much AFL footy, even though he won the JJ Liston. We haven't seen George Haaland-Smith play much, even though he's been tearing up the VFL as well.
He's the one I'm really excited about. He's just shown so much potential. I really like the look of George Haaland-Smith. He could lock it down a squad best 22 this year and have a really big year.
He was sort of brought in as the next Joel Corey, and Joel Corey's moved on, so he might exactly step into that role. So it's an exciting time, but, you know, at the same time, I do want to temper the excitement, because I think their team's in a better spot to win the premiership next year than Geelong, but I'm still confident we'll have a really good season, and I'm really excited to watch some youngsters after years of watching the stalwarts. It'd be cool to see some new exciting youth actually get developed and groomed.
What about H-Mac? Can he stay on the park?
There's no reason to think that he can't, but I think he's not going to play 22 games. I don't think he'll be, you know, as fantasy relevant, because he's very, very likely to be managed throughout the season.
But if he can stay on the park at his price, he's shown the ability to average over 100 before. He'd be a really good pick, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Except we do like big Dawson Simpson. He is 206 centimeters. He's taken a long time to come on, but now that he has, you know, he'd be decent competition for HMAC too, and I don't think they'll mind giving him a rest. You got Blitzarves, it'll still be pinching in there. You got Vardy, that'll still be pinching in there. So he won't get the, you know, full-on number one ruck roll, which is where you get the majority of your points anyway.
The last person I want to ask you about is a player sitting on my forward bench at the moment, and that's Shane Kirsten.
Has he played any games yet, Mark? I don't think he has.
No, I don't think he broke in at the end. It was talk of him coming in for his first game during the finals last year, but didn't quite get selected.
Yeah, that's the best part, is that he hasn't played a game, so his price is as such. And
Pods is gone.
First round selection a couple years back. They've been talking about him pushing up, but I think when he had the opportunities to, he had a few injury issues. So things just, the stars didn't quite align, but he should have got a debut by now, but he hasn't. He's our first round draft pick from a couple years back, so we love putting time into those blokes. And I reckon the guy that he probably plays closest to is Gunston. So he's good at finding holes and leading toward those holes in a crowded 50, and he's good with working with other talls. I don't think he's ready to be a centre half forward. If he could function as a third tall, it'll work quite well for him.
And with Hawkins and Vardy down there, that might actually be an opportunity to play that role.
And the great thing is he can kick 55 metres, Kirsten. He can kick goals from 55 out. So that's probably the thing I love the most about him.
We could probably talk all afternoon about footy, and we haven't even seen the game yet, and Supercoach isn't even open for the regular public, but we should probably finish there.
Yeah. So we'll probably be back in a couple of weeks' time, and the next show that we're going to do, probably look at players that dropped in price from last year, players like Tom Hawkins who had a sore back, players like Sanderlands who are now really cheap because of bung Achilles, and even players like Matthew Pavlich, who only dropped a little bit, but is former superstar that we do need to consider again.
So value.
Yeah, that's probably on our next show, Mark. All the best in the meantime. Survive the heat. Catch you guys in a couple of weeks.
See you, mate.